It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.
Earlier this year, we visited Twisted Path Distillery for our Lake Effect on-site event in Bayview. The company is a micro distillery founded by Brian Sammons.
Sammons took his own Twisted Path to becoming a distiller and has an equally unorthodox approach to his work. Lake Effect's Joy Powers headed over to Bayview to talk to Sammons in the heart of the operation, the distillery.
So what am I looking at right here? I'm looking at, just to describe the room, there's a bunch of what I would describe as vats.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what those are. Those are the fermenters, or three of the fermenters. I got three in here and three in the next room. That's where the yeast turns the sugar into alcohol. So step one is mashing, which you saw over here, and was making a little bit too much noise, but that's where I take a fermentable and add hot water, essentially.
What's a fermentable?
Like for my vodka, I make from wheat, but you could do it from lots of things. You could do it from sugar, you could do it from other grains, you could do it from grapes, make wine. But I make whiskey from grains, vodka from wheat. Rum is from sugarcane. In my case, I use sugarcane molasses. So something that you either has a starch that you convert to a sugar or has sugar in it that then ultimately yeast will eat to make the alcohol.
Okay.
So mixing that the right way, mashing it to make that thing that yeast can ferment. That's what mashing is all about. And then we load it in one of these vats, I guess. I call them fermenters, but it's really the same thing. It's a 320-gallon tank. I do batches that are about 300 gallons. But sometimes they ferment so fast that it'll foam over. So actually having the tank be a little bit extra tall helps not have that happen and saves on me mopping quite so much.
I would imagine so, yeah.
There were some mistakes early on and lots of mopping. But now I've got the process dialed in and that doesn't happen anymore.
Are you self-taught? Is that an accurate way to put this?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I subsequently went to one professional distilling class just to sort of check in and make sure I'm not missing something, but I confirmed that I'm fine. I didn't really learn anything from it, but that was probably actually reassuring that I didn't learn anything from it. I'm self-taught. I started out small and just built up from there. I mean, there's a lot of micro distilleries around the country. They're distilleries of all sizes, and my approach was just to research how they would do any particular thing. And then the overall big picture. But then for each of those things, I would sort of reevaluate and look at, okay, that's how a normal commercial distillery does something. But why do they do it that way? Is there some good reason for that? Do I have any ideas that I think would be a better way to do it? What I found in this industry is that conventional wisdom, it's not necessarily conventional wisdom because it's the best way to do something. I find that conventional wisdom, it's almost an evolutionary process in and of itself. Where I think a lot of people, when they start a business, there's so many things to figure out and so many decisions to be made by the person starting it, that for the most part, they just look at what other people around them are doing and they just do that. Because, hey, other people are doing it, it seems to work, I don't really want to figure it out myself, so I'm just going to do what everybody else does. So over time, that just evolves. And you end up with conventional wisdom being a bunch of things that aren't necessarily the best way to do things. So I sort of reinvented the wheel. It took a really long time to get this place built. Because a lot of stuff I sort of reinvented from scratch.
What are some examples of that in the room that we're looking at right now?
One would be the water heater. The conventional way to heat up water for mashing is called a hot liquor tank. And it's a big stainless steel thing. It's a steam jacket, a steam heated vessel. The vessel itself is very expensive. The steam boiler to power it's very expensive. Installation of it's very expensive. And in the end, you're talking about nearly $50,000 to heat up water, which to me was sort of, you know, okay, well, if that somehow tastes better than just water that's hot, maybe I'll go with that. But does that taste better? Is it fancy hot water? Or is it just the same water you started with, hotter? And it turns out that's all it is. And there's much easier, cheaper, more efficient ways to heat up water. So I built my own water heater. And sure enough, it cost about a 20th as much. And does the same thing. It turns the hot, takes the water you put into it and makes it hot. So as a result, you know, I evaluate something like that and say, okay, well, if the normal way to do this tastes better, I'll do that. No questions asked. The ultimate goal is uncompromising on the quality of the product in the end. And then where conventional wisdom says, well, sure, it tastes better, but it's not cost effective. I've saved the money elsewhere. I can put it into that. It's a matter of focusing priorities. Another example of unconventional would be the still.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. This looks almost steampunk, which now as I'm saying it, sounds like.
Actually, that's a little ironic because the goal, this is a prototype still I built, and the point of it was to avoid having to have it be steam powered, so it's kind of funny that you call it steampunk. It's electric punk. So when I was looking for a commercial still, there wasn't one that worked quite the way I wanted to. I wanted to be able to do what's called grain-in distilling, and I wanted to be able to do it with an electric still instead of having to get a steam boiler and steam power it. Advantageous for a lot of reasons for a startup distillery. So this is a prototype, and it looks sort of do-it-yourself-ish, because it is. my dad and I built the wood surround, and I designed the heating elements. I have a patent pending on them. I found somebody to hand hammer a copper pot, and then I found all these other various parts from various places, and some of them I modified myself. I taught myself to weld in the process and modified some of them. So this is actually electric punk more than steampunk, but it's a prototype. So once the mash ferments, it'll ferment to like beer or wine in terms of percentage alcohol. Yeast can't get higher proof than that. It can't get higher proof alcohol than like a strong wine. That's when then you have to distill it if you want to have stronger alcohol. So that's what this does, is you load something in this that has alcohol, it boils it. So what you're looking at is just a giant pot, but it's a pot with a lid and a channel coming out of it, and it directs the steam coming off your boiling alcoholic liquid because the steam has higher proof alcohol in it. So you direct that over to a condenser. It just provides a cold surface so that that hot alcohol vapor hits that cold surface, condenses back to a liquid, and you collect it. This one has four of them, four little submarine windows, making it a pretty short column. That kind of a still, a pot still with four columns on, or four plate column on it, is great for making full flavored spirits in one run. So what I mean by full flavored spirits are spirits that have a lot of character from what you fermented. So rum, brandy, whiskey, tequila, those kinds of things. The characteristic flavor of those spirits is from what you fermented. That's why the rules defining what those are, and there's rules on all of this, the main rule is what you ferment. And four plates like this is perfect for doing one of those kinds of spirits where you bring over a lot of flavor, but still it still gives the distiller a lot of control to emphasize or de-emphasize different parts of the run and different flavors.
What would be considered not full flavored?
Vodka. So vodka, and then there's a lot of things you make with vodka, like gin or liqueurs and things like that, but that you first make vodka. Actually, in the federal rules that define these things, there's no rule on what you ferment for vodka, because the rules have to do with distilling the taste out. The rules, in a nutshell, are distill it to really, really high proof, over 190, which is close to as high as you can get, and be neutral tasting. I'm air quoting that. Because, I mean, if we're being honest, how do you really enforce that law? Like, neutral tasting to some people is not so neutral to others. But the gist of it is they don't care what you fermented because you're supposed to be distilling the taste of what you fermented out of it. And to accomplish those goals, 190 proof or higher and relatively neutral tasting, you need a whole bunch of these plates. You need to really distill the bejesus out of it, basically. And that's a very different goal. It's the opposite goal when you're trying to make a full-flavored booze. For vodka, you're trying to take out most of the flavor.
One of the things you mentioned on vodkas was the triple distilling it. And as we've gone through this, that seems confusing. You go, there's all of these plates and...
Yes. The reason that's confusing when you come on a tour like this and then you talk about the number of times distilled when it comes in vodka marketing, the reason that's confusing is because you're looking at the disparity between reality, where you stand right here, and marketing. The number of times distilled in vodka marketing is, to the extent I've ever seen it, all fake. To make vodka, to get it to this higher proof, you need to use a reflux column like this to get over 190 proof. And then your number of distillations is a theoretical number based on the number of plates, the efficiency of the plates, and your reflux ratio. But in order to get to 190 proof, it's a really high number of distillations. Triple does not make vodka, like according to science. Distilling something that yeast fermented three times won't get you to high enough proof to be vodka. And in fact, in vodka marketing, that it's just the marketing departments come up with these numbers because they sound good.
You didn't start out in distilling.
No, this is sort of a third career. This was sort of a side career or a side hobby. Okay. Well, home distilling is illegal.
So
I definitely didn't do that.
It definitely did not happen.
Didn't do that, but I thought a lot about it. And I was getting good at thinking about it. The thoughts were tasting great. And it's sort of a long story, the whole career path and how I ended up going into distilling. But essentially, I was on a career path that would have entailed traveling around the world. My wife was on a career path that would have entailed traveling at least around the country, if not around the world, when we met in Madison when we were both in law school. And we decided to prioritize living in Milwaukee and raising kids here. And then we decided that jobs come second. Careers come second, kids and family come first. And so I became a lawyer because I had just gone to law school. And I was doing that for a while. I was a DA here in town, which was interesting, and then went to a law firm. By the time I got to a law firm, what I realized was, A, I didn't like my job. Big surprise there. And B, it was also going to screw up how we wanted to do family life, because I worked too many hours and I was at the beck and call of somebody else all the time. In which case, you know, I was going to screw up family life and not like my job. Well, in my previous career, I could get at least one of those. I'd like my job, but screw up family life. I used to be a CIA officer, and we could go back to the CIA. I could go to the CIA and travel the world and really like my job, but screw up family life. Or we could follow my wife's career in academia, move around and screw up family life, but she'd love her job. So we just went back to the drawing board. I said, okay, blank slate, what is it we want to do? And then we'll try to figure out what our best choices are. And it was still to raise kids in Milwaukee. That was still our number one priority. Okay, well then what do we want for careers? We looked around at people who had the life we were looking for. It was people that had their own business and it was something they loved doing. So you could be your own boss. I can take off for a kid's soccer game or whatever. But that the day in, day out, of course you're gonna have to work a lot, and that goes with anything. And this just fit the bill. It was something I loved doing, something I felt like I was good at, theoretically, because home distilling is illegal, don't do that. It also seemed to be a good fit between the hard parts of doing this fit well with my strengths.
Why is it called Twisted Path?
The Twisted Path name comes from a philosophical concept that my wife and I embrace. The path aspect first, it's embracing life as a path, sort of a Buddhist point of view of, you know, life is a series of moments, and if you live it focused on the next moment, you're never really in the present, you're never really enjoying your life. So living life as a path, and the twisted aspect is rejecting convention and following your own path. Do what works for you, not disregarding expectations of others and what conventional wisdom might think you should do.
What are the biggest things that people get wrong about distilling? When you do these tours, when you're talking to people about the process, what are the biggest misconceptions?
I think a lot of them come from marketing, but you know, they're all over the map. There's the number of times distilled thing. There's a big one that I run into that's just sort of a dividing line between spirits fans and people that aren't quite as into it would be the only measure of a spirit is how smooth it is, in air quotes. And that it just sort of its drinkability. And that mostly relates to, is it higher proof or not? Things like that. That's one thing that can kind of present itself pretty often. Where it can be an issue with something like my white rum, for example. White rum as a category is not really made for sipping. It's made for making cocktails. Daiquiris and mojitos and things with umbrellas in it, right? And in that kind of a cocktail, you need a strong, assertive spirit. So I made my white rum to be exactly that. But if you sip it by itself, you might not describe it as smooth. It's not supposed to be smooth. It's supposed to be present in a cocktail. Not in an alcohol solventy way, but have a big, bold flavor. Some of the other misconceptions would be just, I think, believing a lot of marketing you see elsewhere. Oh, a big one. As a distiller that has celiacs and cannot consume gluten, that spirits couldn't have gluten. I think this is the marketing of one company in particular led a lot of people by just saying gluten-free all day long on their labels and in their advertising, gave people the impression there's a vodka that touts there being gluten-free. That's true. But it gave everybody the misconception that vodka might not be gluten-free. Vodka's gluten-free. I make wheat vodka, and I have celiacs, and I drink it all day long. Not every day. Not all day, every day. But I drink it a lot. And the simple fact is, gluten doesn't evaporate. It's like putting rocks in a pot and trying to boil it, and then you can drink the steam. It is, gluten does not distill. That's a scientific fact. The only way a distilled spirit has gluten is if the manufacturer somehow added gluten after distillation, which would almost never happen. The only thing I can think of is like a whiskey, if they aged it in a beer barrel. Because beer has gluten, because it's not distilled. And if you put the whiskey in the beer barrel, that's after distillation, it could pick up some of the gluten from the beer in the barrel. So I won't drink a whiskey that's aged in a beer barrel.
But otherwise?
Other than that, distilled spirits are gluten-free, and I drink them all the time.
There we go.
Brian Sammons is the distiller and founder of Twisted Path Distillery in Bayview. He spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about his work, and there is more information at WUWM.com.
You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com. It's a shame there wasn't room for whiskey man.